Welcome to an excerpt of the CME activity, Remission, the gold standard for MDD treatment, which is certified by Medscape and presented by Thomas L. Schwartz, MD. Dr. Schwartz is an associate professor, Department of Psychiatry, SUNY Upstate Medical University, Director, Adult Outpatient Services, Director, Treatment-Resistant Depression and Anxiety Disorders Program, SUNY Upstate University Hospital, Syracuse, New York. Dr. Schwartz has disclosed the following relevant financial relationships. He served as an advisor to PAMLAB and Day. He served as a speaker or a member of a speaker's bureau for Merck & Company. He received grants for clinical research from Bristol-Myers Squibb, Cephalon, and Cyberonix. Dr. Schwartz does intend to discuss off-label uses of drugs, mechanical devices, biologics, or diagnostics approved by the FDA for use in the United States. Dr. Schwartz does intend to discuss investigational drugs, mechanical devices, biologics, or diagnostics not approved by the FDA for use in the United States. The purpose of this activity is to describe the importance of remission in depression and the general strategies for achieving it. This activity is supported by Otsuka America Pharmaceutical. To participate in the CME activity, please go to medscape.org/features/audio and select the title.
So welcome to this Medscape education event. My name's Tom Schwartz. I'm from SUNY Upstate Medical University in Syracuse, New York. The topic for today, as you can see, is called Remission, the Gold Standard for Major Depressive Disorder Treatment. Today, what we're going to do is a couple of quick things. We're going to identify evidence-based guidelines for treating major depression to full remission. Then we're also going to spend a bit more time describing the risks associated with partial remission when we don't get people fully better. And then, of course, there's benefits to getting somebody fully better, totally remitted, and we'll cover those items as well. So first thing we need to do is we need to discuss definitions and jargon, because this is what comes up in the literature we read as clinicians. The first thing I want to cover is a response, and typically that's getting a patient at least 50% better. And how do we measure that? When we're interviewing a patient, we often use the DSM criterion, or the mnemonic SIGI CAPS: sleep, interest, guilt, energy, concentration, appetite change, psychomotor change, and suicidal thinking. So every time you interview a patient, we ask these symptoms. And if half of them get better, or if 50% of each one of them improves, we would argue that our patient is a full responder. Some people will often use rating scales in clinical practice. There are clinician-administered scales, such as the Hamilton Depression Rating Scale. There's patient checklists where the patient completes the scale, such as the Inventory of Depressive Symptoms. We could incorporate these, and ideally you get the patient's score at the beginning of treatment, and after they're started, let's say on an antidepressant, you measure again. And if their numerical items are 50% better, they're now a full responder. Now, we've argued for years that despite a response being the FDA norm in regulatory studies, that we really should be using remission. We've stolen this term from the cancer doctors. You know, in cancer, we want 100% of our cancer cells removed. So in the world of depression, we would argue we want 100% of depressive symptoms better, and that's now called a remission. Again, if you don't use rating scales in practice, or if you're not running clinical trials, you want to interview your patient, and you want to ask every symptom every time. And once they're all gone, we would argue your patient is fully remitted. Now again, if you're using rating scales in practice, or if you're reading the literature, almost every rating scale has a defined remission value. So for example, the Hamilton Depression Rating Scale, if somebody scores below a 7, we might argue that they're fully remitted. The Inventory of Depression, which again is a patient-administered scale, maybe if they're below a 12, I would argue they're doing very well to the point of being in full remission. Now what if you hate rating scales, you hate using the SIGI CAP criterion or the DSM criterion? I can make some leeway for that. We want to ask patients questions like, what do you do when you're well, when you're normal? What were you like before you were depressed? And once a person can tell us they're back to their baseline, they're doing things that they used to do, and they're fully functional, and let's say at work and at home, we might argue that they're fully remitted at that point as well. So one thing we need to do is start taking a look at some of the data behind depression treatment. So we're going to focus for a little bit on the antidepressants. The slide here discusses STAR-D. And STAR-D is a landmark federally funded trial that was supposed to answer a lot of our questions. Maybe what antidepressant works well out of the starting gate? What should we switch to? What should we mix and match to get full remission? And what we found at the end of the day is it really didn't matter, and this will come up in future talks in this series, it may not matter what you choose, but you do have to dose the drug at a middle to high dose for 8 to 12 weeks, ideally using rating scales. And if you use aggressive monotherapies or aggressive combination treatments or even psychotherapy, the idea is you can get results and you can push your patients towards remission. Very quickly on this slide, the antidepressant treatment number one that you see was an SSRI. And what you'll notice is about a third of our patients can gain a full remission with an aggressive initial monotherapy. Now, I can be pessimistic or optimistic the way I review the rest of the slide. The pessimistic point of view is when we use a second antidepressant as an item two, or we combine medicines in item three or four, you'll notice remission rates get worse as we go along. Now, part of me would argue that's a bad thing. We get worse and worse luck as we start pushing more and more medications down the road. However, we have to admit, some patients have very difficult to treat depression, just like any other medical illness. So getting lower remission rates as we go is probably the norm, because we're getting down to more difficult to treat and more treatment-resistant patients. Again, future talks in this series will discuss perhaps what we should do when we get down to this level of treatment-resistant depression. The other way to view the slide really is optimistic. If you continue to use good psychopharmacology, good antidepressant strategies, dose in the moderate to high dose, if you keep plugging away, picking any combination or any set of antidepressants off the shelf, you ideally can work towards remission over a year's worth of time. Now, what happens if we don't get into remission? What if you don't make your patient 100% better? What happens? There's a greater risk of relapse back into depression, and I have a couple slides that we'll discuss later how important this is. What we also notice is people who don't get remarkably better continue to have problems in their life. They have difficulties with work. They have difficulties in relationships. They continue to have Axis III or medical problems. And unfortunately, when you're depressed and have certain medical illnesses, those illnesses do worse. They don't recover or remit as well. Utilization goes up, phone calls to primary care, more prescriptions, more blood draws. So it's really a problem in the world of primary care as well. And finally, the final bullet point has to do with the fact that people that do not get into remission from their depression continue to have an elevated risk of hurting themselves or continuing substance abuse. Now, I had mentioned earlier that getting to remission is the gold standard. And there's a series of slides here which drives home item number one, why it's important. Notice here that if we get people into remission after their first treatment, so that's an SSRI treatment, even after a year, 33% of our patients might relapse back into a depressive episode. What if we only get them partially better? They're not in remission. 60%, double, will actually start relapsing. So if you want to get your patient out of their depression, prevent a chronic illness, the idea is you want to aim for remission. Otherwise, the relapse rates are quite high. Another minor point, what if we've tried two antidepressants? What you'll notice is the gap narrows. The remission rates versus the response rates are closer, meaning that people will tend to relapse more often after two antidepressant treatments. The story continues after three treatments. And on this slide, the most important thing is to look at this part titled Four Treatments. What you'll notice here, if somebody really took four antidepressant trials over 1 year to get better, we can still get them remitted. We showed you in that initial STAR-D study and trial and slide that we can accomplish this. The problem is these are the patients who are most likely to relapse. They're equal to responders, and almost everybody relapses within a year. So the idea is if you actually finally get somebody to full remission after 3 to 4 medication trials, you need now to very closely monitor for some initial symptoms coming back, pending a relapse into full depression. And at that point, typically, we may adjust medications or start psychotherapy. The idea is to not let them relapse fully. Now, I'm going to switch over a little bit to some guidelines for treatment. And what you'll notice here is, here's your standard patient with depression. If they come in and you start a medication, ideally what you want to do is start at a low dose that's FDA approved. And at that point, see how they do over a few weeks. If they're not better, you want to optimize a dose. And that means using a middle to a higher dose, again, still within FDA guidelines. Wait several weeks, and ideally they respond. If they're not a full responder, you can consider some other things at this point. You certainly could switch medications. You could use augmentation or combination strategies. Again, we'll discuss a lot about these later. And you certainly could use psychotherapy. If that wasn't started initially, you could actually add that on at this point. Many psychotherapy studies exist. It's a valid treatment for depression and oftentimes can work equally well as to medications. Now, one thing we talked about as far as getting people to remission is 100% symptom reduction. Unfortunately, what happens is that people get treated with an antidepressant, but they often have residual or leftover symptoms. Here's a study by Nierenberg, which suggests if you start somebody on antidepressant, most people have at least two or more remaining symptoms. Our first antidepressant often doesn't get us to remission. So the key is to identify what remaining symptoms are left to treat for your patient. This slide really drives home two key ones, and you can see them on the end of the slide, insomnia and fatigue. In my experience, we can often get patients much better in regards to being sad, crying, suicidal. A lot of those emotional type symptoms seem to clear up very well initially. But after weeks of treatment, many of my patients would really support what this research slide suggests. They still have fatigue, they're tired, they're not sleeping well. Some people are still a bit amotivated. And so I think these are key symptoms to look for after your first initial antidepressant treatment. Now, we can go back to STAR-D again, and STAR-D in this area found something similar. There was still sleep disturbance. So again, please screen your patients after treatment for insomnia and difficulties there. But STAR-D also felt that they found continued issues with weight, appetite being up, weight gain. Now, one warning here, is this really residual depressive symptoms or are these side effects from the medicines we prescribed? Many of our antidepressants can increase weight gain and cause sleep disturbance. So somewhere you need to split hairs. Is it a side effect that remains or is it really a depressive symptom that's left over? I think either way, you want to treat those things. You want to mitigate side effects and you want to get rid of entirely all the depressive symptoms as best you can. Now, one thing, we've been really pushing symptoms and rating scales, and we want people to be 100% better. I like this slide because it really suggests to us in the very top line, we can get symptoms to go away. But what you'll notice, each lower line suggests that we're not so good with other things. So for example, well-being, feeling positive, being social with friends and family members, going to work, being productive at work, and even physical or somatic symptoms, we're not very good at getting those to completely go away. So sometimes we have full symptom resolution, but the patient really isn't well again in regards to psychosocial functioning. A lot of rating scales will not cover those items. So I think in practice, when you're interviewing patients, it's very important to make sure you get symptom reduction and that the patient is truly well again. And another way to do this might be using interviewing techniques, asking patients what they were like when they weren't depressed. What did you do when you were perfectly well? Have them list several things they would do, managing their stock portfolio, playing golf on Sunday, looking forward to being with friends, family, grandkids, etc. Keep track of those like their symptoms. And when they're all better and your patient is totally re-engaged in those interpersonal and supportive relationships, then they might be considered well again or in remission. So continuing with some guidelines, what if you prescribe that first antidepressant and the patient develops side effects? This is common. All drugs have side effects. One thing you can reflexively do is lower the dose. So if the patient is having severe side effects, this makes sense. We want to lower the antidepressant or even get rid of it. However, what if they're starting to respond? If you lower the dose, they may relapse. So the other option would be to try to treat the side effects. The idea is to keep a patient on their medication as long as possible. That's where we can see them respond, remit, and ideally stay in remission. If patients have headaches, we should treat them. If they have stomach aches, we should treat them. There's options if people gain weight or develop sexual dysfunction. They're not perfect and they don't work all the time, but there are antidotes or remedies available. And the idea is to keep the patient on their antidepressant that's functioning well as long as possible. Now, what if we've tried a full dose and a full trial of an antidepressant and it's just not working? We can't get people better. I think the idea is to consider switching the antidepressant. Now, there's a lot of debate, and the data would suggest, just like STAR-D, that switching a monotherapy is fine. There's no real straight guidelines to suggest what is working better, which drug should be your first switch to drug. I tell clinicians, choose a set of drugs you're very comfortable with, you're very familiar with, and if the first drug fails, then I would consider switching to a second drug that you like, that fits the patient's needs and their symptoms. So I would go ahead and make switches, but again, start low, but you do ultimately want to dose to a moderate to a high level of that antidepressant. Many psychiatrists like to switch classes. The idea of if a serotonin-only antidepressant has failed to gain remission, switching to a drug with a different neurotransmitter profile makes theoretical sense, and that would also be an option. And again, psychotherapy. If your patient hasn't engaged in psychotherapy, hasn't tried psychotherapy, that would be a reasonable thing to add or actually switch to if the patient is particularly side effect prone with medications. Now, what else? What if your patient isn't fully better? There's been a lot of talk and discussion and research regarding augmentation. What could you add to that initial monotherapy antidepressant? The first thing might be a second-generation antipsychotic or an atypical antipsychotic. And the reason I say the first thing is that's where most of our FDA approvals lie at this point. And we'll have further lectures and further content regarding the atypical antipsychotics, but it would certainly be reasonable to choose to add one of them. Now, lithium has roughly 8 or 9 controlled trials. It's not FDA approved to treat depression, though certainly has a decent evidence base to support its use. Thyroid hormone can also be used, but the data is a bit less. The nutraceuticals, or vitamin-based therapies, things like L-methylfolate and SAMe, we're starting again to see small controlled trials that are showing benefit in augmentation. And as far as other things, there's plenty of things. When I lecture on these to large groups, people will raise their hands with 15, 16 other options. And again, a lot of those have less evidence base to support their use, but in any individual patient might be an effective option for them. Now, what about combinations? There are certainly some evidence-based valid combinations where we can mix and match full-blown antidepressants together. Now again, there are some combination products where you can mix an SSRI antidepressant and an atypical antipsychotic. Evidence-based treatment that are FDA approved exist for that combination. What's off-label but is most oftentimes used in practice is mixing an SSRI and an NDRI. Now the NDRI is the bupropion product line. These drugs promote norepinephrine and dopamine. So in this combination, we hit all three monoamines, serotonin, norepinephrine, and dopamine. Again, the evidence base is fairly weak in regards to it's lacking. We don't have a lot of randomized controlled trials. But a lot of clinicians like this combination because it does combine all neurotransmitter symptoms theoretically involved in causing depression. You could mix an SSRI antidepressant with a more sedating antidepressant. Sometimes we'll mix trazodone ER or mirtazapine with an SSRI. That way we're manipulating the serotonin system from a couple different angles as well. And then the heroic combinations are mixing things like tricyclic antidepressants and first-generation antipsychotics. There is an FDA-approved combination there. And then sometimes we will actually mix a tricyclic with an MAOI. And again, that has to be done very gingerly. You have to follow the literature on that. It's a rarely used option, but it is certainly a valid one for patients who haven't done well. And if all else fails, you can get into the realm of neurostimulation or neuromodulation. These device-based treatments, vagus nerve stimulation, transcranial magnetic stimulation, and electroconvulsive therapy, all have FDA approvals in regards to treating more resistant depressions. These are certainly options when psychotherapy and medications have failed, or certainly if patients haven't tolerated medication management. Sometimes these device-based treatments can be better tolerated and work well for patients in that area as well. And finally, as far as prescribing and doing psychopharmacology, we still have to use psychotherapy skills. We need to use our core skill sets in regards of things like empathy, psychoeducation, working with a patient, partnering with a patient, setting goals. I think all of these things increase rapport and motivation and compliance with medications. Remember, every antidepressant has a placebo effect, 30 to 40% in most trials. I think using medications you're comfortable with and that you believe in will actually convey a better placebo effect. And again, if patients are responding to real biological effects and or placebo effects, that's a good thing. The goal is to get to remission and keep people in remission. And finally, we really have to use a psychoeducational informed consent model. I think discussing with patients in layman's terms how their depression occurred likely, what has caused it likely, how we can treat it with medications or psychotherapy and how those might work, it gives a meaning to their illness and to the treatments, and I do think they're more likely to stay on their medications, again, ideally lowering their symptoms, improving their rating scales, and getting them to remission. So in conclusions, I think all patients should be evaluated and their treatment should be tailored to meet their individual needs. As this lecture series goes on, you'll see more and more specific ideas about different psychopharmacological treatments that we can use to improve depression and ideally get patients into remission. So thank you for participating in this Medscape education activity. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this excerpt of the CME activity, Remission, the Gold Standard for MDD Treatment. To participate in the CME activity, please go to medscape.org/features/audio and select the title.